These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
I hope that they kind of keep it calm, keep it measured. I think if you get those things right, I think they've got the best potential and headroom in terms of how far they can go and what kind of performance they can deliver. They'll have a great day.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Police in Australia say they fear the worst for a British tourist who disappeared after being attacked in a remote part of the outback.
The hunt for the gunman and the missing male tourist began early this morning after the alarm was raised by the tourist's girlfriend.
British backpackers Peter Falconio and girlfriend Joanne Lees were driving through the centre of Australia when they were flagged down by a man in a ute.
It was here in 2001 that two English backpackers travelling in a VW combi van met their fate and sparked the biggest manhunt in Northern Territory history.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and on today's episode of the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Andrew Rule, associate editor and columnist with the Australian newspaper The Herald Sun, to ask who killed Peter Falconio.
I definitely did not do it. I'm not a fucking murderer.
Andrew, can you take us back to 2001 and events on the Stuart Highway, one of the longest and most remote roads in the world?
Spanning the length of Australia from Adelaide to Darwin, the Stuart Highway is 2,834 kilometres long and cuts the continent in half. An isolated and often low...
In the old days, they used to race cars up it and do 1,000 miles in 10 hours. It's that sort of road. So people go out there and they drive fast to get from one place to the very far north. In the far north is the city of Darwin, the capital of the Northern Territory. Among them, of course, are scoundrels and scallywags who take in illicit contraband, which could be an aspect that affects this story.
Tell me about Peter Falconio then and his girlfriend Joanne Lees and their trip.
Peter Falconio is from West Yorkshire in the UK, so he's about 27 at this point. His girlfriend, Joanne Lees, is a year younger. They met in a nightclub in Yorkshire, as people might, and they've lived together, I think, in Brighton in the UK. They've taken up the idea of doing a sort of a world trip or a trip around Asia. They've arrived in Australia in January of that year, 2001, and yet all the events we're talking about are 7 months later in July. So you can see that this couple have been together quite a while.
So what happens to them on that night as they're travelling up the Stuart Highway past a place called Barrow Creek?
It's interesting, I think, that they get to Alice Springs a couple of days before the fateful night when Peter Falconio disappears. And they're in Alice Springs for at least one night, maybe two. They then announce that they're heading up the Stuart Highway to Darwin and that they're going to leave in the afternoon of July the 14th. They are determined to do this for some reason, despite the fact locals said to them, that's not a good idea. If you break down out there in your combi van, you'll be there all night without any help. Either leave earlier, you know, earlier that day or early next day. For whatever reason, they insisted that they would leave at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and away they went. About 3.5 hours later, roughly, they are up near a district a place called Barrow Creek. It's a very desolate, isolated place. And going along in their combi, this is according to what Joanne Lees later tells the police and tells the world, a ute pulls up next to them and the driver apparently signals to them to pull over and sort of points downwards as if there's a problem with their vehicle. So they pull over, according to Joanne Lees, and apparently the driver of the ute says, oh, there's sparks coming out of your exhaust system. Peter Falconio, who's driving, jumps out of the combi and walks to the back of the combi with the driver of the ute. And they call out to Joanne to rev the motor of the combi to see what the problem is. She later says she then hears a loud bang. She assumes, naturally enough, that it's some sort of backfiring of the motor and doesn't think much about it. Then the driver of the ute appears. Falconio does not appear. She doesn't see him again. The driver of the ute appears, grabs her, ties her hands together with some sort of tape or plastic binding material and effectively makes a prisoner of her. His ute, it actually has a canvas canopy on the back. And she's tossed in there and she doesn't know what's happening. She is terrified and horrified. It's dark. And she realises that the man has vanished for a while and she tells the police later that she saw her opportunity to escape. And somehow she's rolled herself out of the vehicle, dropped onto the road, bruising her knees and tearing her jeans. She can't see anybody, so she heads off into the scrub beside the road. She cleverly, probably, heads off on a diagonal angle. She doesn't go straight into the scrub, so she ends up quite away from the ute, but only about 35 metres from the actual highway. And the highway, of course, is going to be her salvation, if indeed there is any salvation, because at this point in time, she must be thinking that her days are numbered and that whatever bad thing has happened to Peter may well happen to her. She says she lies under a bush and she lies there and lies there. She sees that the man from the ute comes back and he searches with his dog for her, she says. She said he had a spotty dog. She thought something like a cattle dog. The man and beast do not find the terrified girl. I believe that to be true, and I can't see why it's not true. Unless, of course, Joanne Lees is completely fabricating her whole story. She lies there, she's terrified. They disappear. And she lay there for hours, frightened that any approaching headlights would be her attackers coming back to finish her off. Joanne Lees was nervous to get out on the road because if any lights came along, they might be the bad guy who's come back to trick her and find her. She waits for a truck to come. Now, these big interstate trucks that ply the highways of outback Australia are massive things. They're festooned with lights like a circus, and they've got driving lights set very high on the cabin so that they can look 2 miles up the road. She hobbles out to the road. Her hands are still bound, and she gets herself out to the road and she manages to wave down the truck.
I just felt angry, the fact that some person could do that to another human being. That girl was that scared. She was petrified and she was screaming the whole time, I've got to find Pete. We said, who's Pete? And she said, it's my boyfriend, he's been shot. I've seen a lot of things over a lot of years, but that I've never seen before in anybody's face.
In the truck are two fellows, a driver and his mate. They take her to the Barrow Creek Roadhouse, which is not far away. They take her into the bathrooms and take the tape off her hands and clean her up because she's all dirty and dusty. And they bring her out and they bring the police. It's in Alice Springs, I think, who initially dismiss them as cranks. They ring back, they get the police and persuade them it's real. The police do not arrive until just before dawn next morning. They take Joanne back out to the site. They find the combi van sort of stashed off the road somewhere. There is no sign of Peter Falconio or Peter Falconio's body. They don't find sort of footprints or dog foot tracks or anything that sort of stacks up Joanne Lees's story, and are initially dubious about her story, lies, and they sort of test what they're being told, and they don't see obvious signs of the veracity of her story. However, we are out in the desert. It's shaly, rocky ground. It would take a far better tracker than any of those sort of flatfoot coppers to know what they're looking at.
How do they go about searching? Because basically, Falconio is missing here at this point.
Falconio's missing. The combi's been stashed way off the road a little way, but they can't actually find much sign of anything to vindicate her story. However, in her defence, all this happened in the pitch black dark. She told the police that they'd smoked a joint and that smoking a joint could have affected her judgment in some way, have, in her fright and adrenaline-charged terror, have moved off to one side of the road on an angle and then being unable to reproduce that to the police next morning. You can't think straight when you're full of adrenaline. They sort of doubted this story for some reason at the start, and which, of course, has always thrown some doubt on Joanne Lees's veracity for some people. However, we have to say here, in fairness, the police later come around to believing what she tells them.
A new character comes into the equation here, and that is Bradley John Murdoch.
What Joanne Lees has told the police is that a biggish man has got out of this ute and approached the combi. And this man has, she said, long straggly hair, a baseball cap and a droopy moustache. And he has this dog. Now, her description, to some extent, apart from the specifics about hair and cap and moustache, it's reasonably generic. And the police take it down as best they can, and they get precisely nowhere. But they do, I believe, come to trust Joanne Lees's version of events, despite certain niggling doubts, such as her prickliness, her defensiveness. She's sort of offhand with the police. Her attitude leaves a bit to be desired. The fact that we don't really go for Joanne Lees's attitude and the way she talks is not an indicator that she is a co-offender who has connived in the murder of her fiancé. A couple of years after Falconio disappears, police elsewhere, not in Alice Springs, they get hold of a crook called James Heppy. And James Heppy is a drug dealer. He sends cannabis up the highway to Darwin. When they grab him for selling large amounts of cannabis, he says, look, I might be able to help you with that Falconio thing. And they go, what? He said, well, you know, this guy I used to run the drugs up the road every month, Bradley John Murdoch, he's really paranoid about that case. And he drives a Toyota Ute with a canopy on the back and he's got a dog. He's been really paranoid about that case because he feels that he's could match the description and he could be arrested for it, whatever. So I'm telling you that because I reckon he's good for it. Why don't you look at him? He sells out Murdoch. Now, he's got a motive to sell out Murdoch to get the coppers off his back. That doesn't mean that he's right or it doesn't mean that he's wrong. So the police go and find Bradley John Murdoch. And he fits Joanne Lees's description largely.
He is a huge bloke, 6'5", but he's big across the shoulders. You couldn't miss him. You could not mistake the bloke.
And he has form. He's a nasty, fairly violent, gun-loving, nasty man.
He does appear to fit the bill, though, in terms of description, the areas he was travelling in, the prospect that he was there in that area on the night, and the fact that there is an identification by Joanne, that ultimately combines to convict him.
It took years of meticulous police work to find the killer, a known outback drug runner and diesel mechanic from Broome, the number one suspect. DNA evidence, the crucial link that would eventually see Bradley John Murdoch tried and convicted for the attack.
What the police have built against Murdoch is a circumstantial case with no body, no smoking gun, no ballistics, no footprints, none of that stuff. And what they end up with, back in those days when DNA sampling was not nearly as sophisticated as it is now, they said they found a tiny speck of blood on Joanne Lees's T-shirt. And they said that when this blood was analysed, lo and behold, reveals that it is not Peter Falconio's blood and it's not Joanne Lees's blood and it's not dog blood. It is DNA that matches Bradley John Murdoch's. Now, this was a wonderfully lucky or convenient discovery for the prosecution, because I would suggest that without that, they would not have got a conviction against Bradley John Murdoch, because the case is so circumstantial otherwise. It was the one tiny bit of allegedly scientific evidence against him, and it was enough to put him away.
He's convicted. He gets 30 years, but he has appealed this conviction twice now, but unsuccessfully.
True. A former defence lawyer called Andrew Fraser. Now, Andrew Fraser, I know him well. I spoke to him yesterday. He was one of Australia's leading and most colourful defence lawyers who did big crime cases.
Over the years, I must have defended thousands of cases, every type of crook you could imagine. Drug barons, businessmen, murderers, I've done the lot. I used to love having the reputation as being the go-to bloke or one of the go-to blokes if you were right in the shit. And then 10 years ago, Brad Murdoch asked me to reevaluate his case to see whether there was any hope of any sort of further appeal. For 10 years, we've been working towards a petition of mercy. It's a document whereby you set out chapter and verse everything you see wrong with the case. But a petition of mercy is notoriously difficult to get up.
Fraser, speaking as a former defence lawyer, and a good one, a tough one, said there are so many holes in this conviction that whether he did it or not, he should never have been convicted because it's just too thin a case. It's circumstantial. He goes back through and goes to Alice Springs. He goes to Darwin. He interviews Bradley Murdoch in jail. One of the key bits of evidence allegedly against Murdoch was that there was a service station in Alice Springs, which late on the night that that Falconio disappears, a Toyota Ute with a canvas canopy pulls into the service station back in Alice Springs, and a tallish man, a biggish man, gets out. He's got long, straggly hair and a baseball cap and a moustache, and he walks over. He fills the car with diesel. He walks over and he pays for the diesel, and then he walks back to his vehicle, gets in it and drives off. Now, the police were delighted with that security footage, very grainy footage, poor quality. It was accepted as Bradley Murdoch because it pretty well looked like him and his vehicle. But Fraser claims Bradley Murdoch is 6'5". That's 2 metres and whatever it is, right? These Toyota Utes, all of them are under the 2 metre mark because otherwise you cannot park them in an underground car park. When the man at the service station walks out to his vehicle, you can tell that his head, the top of his head, is lower than the corner of the canopy. And so you say that guy is not 2 metres high. That guy is more like, 6 foot. The other thing that Fraser claims is that when you look at the wheel nuts on this particular vehicle, there are six. But when you look at a slightly different model, such as Murdoch's actual model, it had different configuration. And he said that's another problem for the film. So Fraser, rightly or wrongly, has been chipping away at the veracity of the police case. He takes the example of the blood on the T-shirt. He takes it to two DNA experts. Analysis has moved on. That is not a safe amount to test. And the other tests that the police did in the vehicle with looking for sweat on the gear stick and all that doesn't stack up anymore. It's no more likely to be Bradley Murdoch than anyone else. So Fraser, the defence lawyer, has undermined key things in the prosecution case so far.
Do you think Murdoch is guilty? And secondly, do you think Falconio's body will ever be found?
I think Falconio's body will never be found because it will be out there somewhere, probably buried very shallowly in millions of wild acres of empty desert where there's no reason for anybody to go. Don't know if it's a safe conviction against Bradley Murdoch or not. There are a lot of books written about this case, probably six. The best of them is the last one written by a journalist called Paul Toohey, good Irish name, and he writes a pretty compelling story that is damning of Bradley John Murdoch. The fact that a journalist writes a really good story that's really well written doesn't necessarily make it true. I am genuinely agnostic about this. I just don't know where the truth is.
And my thanks to Andrew Rule of The Herald Sun. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode was produced by Gareth Mulhall, researched by Paul Hyland, with sound by John Smith. Archive clips from the BBC, CBS, Channel 4, ABC, and the Irish Independent. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow and leave us a review.
These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them, like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.